From MainePublic.org, here's the news for this day in Maine, Monday, November 14th, 2016. I'm Andrew Catalina, in for Barbara Caridi. And on this day, officials in Lewiston and Orono are speaking out against hate in their communities in the wake of Donald Trump's election. Overdose deaths are on track to reach record levels, and a school in Portland is dedicated to teaching adulting. Those stories and more after this.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs, and Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light. Tickets available at mainegardens.org.
Susan Hunter, president of the University of Maine in Orono, and other UMaine system presidents are assuring students that acts of hate against students based on political preferences, ethnicity, or religious background will not be tolerated, and that campus police are prepared to respond. AJ Higgins has more.
Hunter's email to the students at the UMS flagship campus was received against a national backdrop of harassment incidents that followed last week's presidential election. Various news outlets have reported a spate of racist incidents at several schools, including the University of Oklahoma and the University of Pennsylvania. Dan DeMeritt, a spokesman for the University of Maine system, says presidents throughout the system are making similar statements to reassure students that their rights will be respected on campus.
Just sending the message out of an overabundance of concern that everyone feel welcome, that our campuses remain places where civility is valued and even-handed discourses occurs. It was a difficult political time. You know, the long partisan season is now over, and we just want to make sure in this time of kind of unease and uncertainty as we move past the politics, that our campuses are welcoming places for everybody.
The university system's response followed an appearance on CBS News 60 Minutes Sunday, in which President-elect Donald Trump said that he will tell his supporters that are harassing minorities to, quote, stop it. DeMeritt says there have been no incidents of harassment reported at any of the UMS campuses.
Some of the actions you're seeing around the country, in other parts of the country, that our campuses and our campus communities got the message from our campus leaders that that Maine's universities are safe and welcome places. And just encouraging dialogue and people to come together. And if you have concerns or questions, we have staff and resources in place on all the campuses to address those things.
UMaine President Hunter says any illegal, abusive, or incivil behavior should be reported to the UMaine Police or the Dean of Students' Office. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm AJ Higgins.
Following Tuesday's election and reports of race-based harassment around the country, Lewiston Mayor Robert McDonald issued a statement to assure residents that the City of Lewiston and the Police Department will not tolerate such behavior of any members of the community for any reason. He echoed that sentiment in a telephone interview with Maine Public Radio.
And I just don't want certain people, trying to juice these people up or getting all upset, because there's no reason for them to get upset. They're very nice people, the Somalis, and I like them, and I get along very well with them, and I don't need a bunch of people that have an agenda, either left or right, upsetting the apple cart. So that's where we stand.
Lewiston has a large population of Somali and Somali Bantu residents. In the past, Mayor McDonald has had an uneasy relationship with them, at one point suggesting that they should leave their culture at the door. But in his statement, McDonald says he's proud that as one of the state's most diverse cities, Lewiston is also one of the safest. He said he joins President-elect Donald Trump in calling on those who might consider engaging in harassment or provoking trouble to stop.
And there's not going to be this stuff in Lewiston. There's nobody has to be worried about anything. Just go about, all they have to do is go about their daily work and play and whatever and school, and nothing's going to happen.
According to the Lewiston Police Department, there have been no reported incidents of harassment since the election. Interim Police Chief Brian O'Malley says the department has been in contact with representatives of the immigrant community and will closely monitor the situation. O'Malley says the department will respond aggressively should any incidents occur. Congress is back at work this week, but how much they'll actually do is being debated behind closed doors by Republican leadership in the House and Senate. Mallory reports.
The biggest item on the agenda is finalizing a budget for the year that started last October 1st. The federal government is operating on a continuing resolution that runs out December 9th. Maine Senator Angus King says they could complete work on the budget bills in short order if Republican leaders want to. He says options being considered are another continuing resolution until March, and one for the whole year. King says that would be terrible, locking in last year's spending priorities. He says Congress should do its job and pass a budget. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
At $800,000 a shell, the ammunition for the new 155mm gun system on the USS Zumwalt, built at Bath Iron Works, is so expensive that the Navy has only bought 90 rounds with no plans to buy more. Republican U.S. Senator Susan Collins of Maine says the Navy needs to work with contractors to reduce the price of the shell, designed to hit targets up to 80 miles inland.
Part of the purpose of the Zumwalt and the other DDG 1000s was to have this long-range land attack capacity.
Collins says when the Navy went from 32 Zumwalt-class destroyers to just three, the per-unit cost of the special shells went way up. But Collins says at the current price, which is almost as much as some guided missiles, the weapon is too expensive to use. She says the Navy must work with contractors to get the price down to an affordable level. Figures released by Attorney General Janet Mills indicate Maine is on track to have a record number of drug overdose deaths this year. Through September 30th, there were 286 drug deaths, more than the 272 recorded for all of 2015.
These are preventable deaths. Every one of these deaths is a preventable death. We have got to get the word out on the street and in the houses where these people are living that there is help available, and we've got to make that help available.
Mills says on average, one person a day in Maine dies from a drug overdose. She's frustrated, saying people are becoming accustomed to the drug deaths that are affecting more and more Mainers.
286 people, Maine citizens, have found their demise at the hands of a needle or an overdose of pills, and this is appalling. I think if 286 baby seals washed up on the shores of Cape Elizabeth, somebody would be doing something.
She says both the federal and state governments need to do more to provide treatment and prevention efforts. A Spruce-Head fisherman is facing penalties of up to $500 and the suspension of his harvester's license after a state Marine Patrol officers charged him with fishing beyond his trap limit. Jeff Nichols, a spokesman for the State Department of Marine Resources, says 52-year-old Brian Tarbox was only licensed to fish with 800 traps when he was stopped by Marine Patrol officers.
The Marine Patrol hauled all of his gear and discovered that he actually, in addition to having tags that belonged to another harvester on his traps, he was fishing 156 traps in excess of his total.
Marine Patrol Colonel John Cornish said fishermen who fish in excess of trap limits not only undermine important lobster conservation laws, it's unfair to hundreds of other law-abiding harvesters in the region. Cornish said that violations on a scale similar to Tarbox's are highly unusual in Maine. The Portland area housing market has been on a roll the past several years, or a steamroll for many middle-income residents. Vacancy rates are low, rents have outpaced income growth, and some renters have been forced to move to less expensive areas. That demand has driven some fast-paced development in Portland and, increasingly, in neighboring communities as well. Fred Bever reports.
Early this year, a federal study projected that within 2 years, the greater Portland area would need some 2,000 new rental units to meet demand. That's no secret to the developers who've been on a construction and conversion binge. Jonathan Culley and Tom Watson have teamed up to build the biggest new market-rate rental building Portland's seen in at least 3 decades here, over the home of a longtime city institution called Joe's Smoke Shop.
It won't be called Joe's Smoke Shop Apartments. We're working on some names, and so we're kicking some things around.
Culley stands in the open-framed top floor of the building in progress. The view is impressive, panoramic, across the sparkling Back Bay to the faded white mountains beyond, over the city's bustling West End, and down below the 19th-century brownstones of historic Longfellow Square. 7 stories, 110,000 square feet of housing and amenities, 40,000 square feet of parking, 139 market-rate units.
This, of all the projects that I've permitted in Portland, this is probably the least controversial because it is in such a dense urban block where this building is very consistent with the other buildings in terms of size, scale, massing, density. The building I just built in on Anderson Street is the first large apartment building in that neighborhood. And so it was a little more challenging to sell that vision to the neighbors.
You know, one of the things that we talk about when we talk about the housing crisis is that we need to build more units.
That's Culley's partner, Tom Watson. His company, Port Property Management, is the single largest landlord in the city, renting more than 1,000 units. When he started out in the early 1990s, he says he had trouble renting up the first multi-unit he bought a few blocks from here. Different story now, when average rents have run up more than 40% over 5 years or so. Watson and Culley hope to rent these units at $1,100 to $1,500 a month.
We can make the argument that for a lot of folks, it's not affordable. But what happens is, as long as the units are built, you'll find a number of the folks that rent here will migrate from some of our apartments in the West End. And that will create a vacancy in some of my other apartments and drive that rent down. Building more units will drive vacancy elsewhere and suppress rents.
Portland officials say that over the past 2 years, some 800 units for rent or for sale have either been built in the city or are soon to come online. That influx of new stock might just act as a brake on rents and prices. Kevin Bunker, who develops affordable and market-rate housing in Portland, says the Joe's Smoke Shop project is being closely watched. He says how fast it rents up, whether it can command the rents the developers are asking for, could prove a bellwether for where the city's overall rental market is headed and how eager banks will be to finance more new units.
I don't think anyone's thinking there's a crash or even a correction, but I think it seems like the go-go glory days are kind of coming to an end.
And some of the pressure is being exported to Portland's neighbors, to Westbrook, for instance, where contentious debate has broken out over a potential development moratorium. In Scarborough, a national development group and a local landlord recently proposed a 300-plus unit apartment complex on Route 1 near the Scarborough Land Rover dealership. Tom George is a vice president at the Newman Development Group. He says his company is looking for sites to build new multi-units in various greater Portland communities, such as Scarborough, Falmouth, and South Portland, where rents do seem to meet developers' expectations.
If not, outperform, and so that usually means that there's not much supply or not enough competition, and those are in some dated properties, you know, properties that are, you know, 20, 30, 40 years old that are commanding pretty strong rents and are fully leased up. So we look at things like that, and all those indicators, you know, point to a good market.
It's been decades since any new multi-units were constructed in Scarborough, but town officials say the Newman Group isn't the only developer eyeing their community. Another is considering a similar-sized project just a few miles down Route 1. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Becoming a grown-up isn't easy. There's a career to pick, money to manage, and relationships to navigate. The transition to adulthood isn't new, but there is a new term for it: adulting. A school has opened in Portland that's dedicated to teaching people how to manage the realities of life once they've grown out of adolescence. It's called the Adulting School, and it recently held a day-long summit that Patty White attended.
Do a quick search on social media, and you'll see the term adulting is popping up everywhere. It was even nominated for the 2015 Word of the Year by the American Dialect Society. As for how it's used, here's a sample.
Hey, I got out of bed today. I'm adulting.
Oh, I wanted to go out Saturday night, but I had to buy my groceries, like, hashtag adulting.
Bringing your car for an oil change is adulting.
We went to the grocery store and made our meal instead of going out. We're adulting.
I just, you know, I'm dragging it in. Let's go. Doing all these things. I'm adulting. We're doing it. We're doing this now.
That was Allison Morrill, Sarah Savage, Sarah Steele, and Scott Whiting, all attendees of the Adulting School's day-long summit, which offered workshops on everything from money and time management to relationships and meditation. Rachel Weinstein is the co-founder of the school. She says she got the idea through her work as a psychotherapist.
I noticed as a therapist that there were a lot of my clients whose well-being seemed to be affected by a lack of some really important skills. And I know over the decades, with kind of teaching to the test and other changes in education, schools have had to cut a lot of home ec classes. And that's some of the stuff that people really need to learn and aren't necessarily taught unless they have parents that really make, you know, impress those skills upon them.
Weinstein also noticed that a lot of her clients thought their problems were unique. She wanted to bring these people together to learn grown-up skills in a fun way, so she started the Adulting School and offered happy hour workshops. Since July, burgeoning adults can head to a designated restaurant or bar once a month to sip a cocktail and snack on appetizers while learning grown-up essentials.
We did a happy hour workshop on how to be an improv cook. You know, how do you open up your refrigerator and make a meal with what you have there? Or how to network. We had another one, how to network like a pro.
The Adulting School also offers monthly memberships to access private social media groups and experts. It's open to anyone, but the target audience is millennials. That demographic made up the bulk of attendees at the summit, as did women.
I find myself feeling anxious a lot, that I'm not doing what I should be doing.
29-year-old Allison Morrill has a steady job as a surgical tech, but she also has huge debt.
Credit card stuff, which I didn't think that I would have at this age, and I really don't have the skill set how to pay for our rent and how to pay for our food, and then on top of paying off that debt.
Finding a pathway to financial security is also what brought 24-year-old graduate student Sarah Savage to the summit.
The balance of paying loans, and then you definitely hear about saving for that six-month cushion if something were to come up. And then I have a very generous mother who's allowing me to live with her right now. But even the idea of, like, saving for an apartment
sounds out of reach. 31-year-old Sarah Steele, a single mom struggling to balance her budget and her time, summed up what she thinks is the overarching question as young adults reflect on the past achievements of their parents.
How did they do it?
This anxiety about being an adult is actually nothing new, says Holly Swires, associate professor of anthropology at Lake Forest College, who's writing a book about adulthood.
And I think labeling it as something like adulting makes it feel manageable.
Swires says even in the 1950s, there was hand-wringing about how to be a grown-up. Part of what drives the phenomenon is that there's no dedicated place in society to learn adult skills.
You know, the most teachable moments you have are in young adulthood, and that's when we decide to stop teaching everyone. And you just say, okay, kid, figure it out. And that's when you're finding your partner. That's when you're figuring out what job you want. That's when you're figuring out, you know, how do you run a household. That's when you're figuring out how to not spend all your rent money in the first week.
Many of the attendees at the Adulting School Summit say they're glad to have a dedicated place to go in Portland to help get their adult life in order. And single mom Sarah Steele says she's learned that being an adult isn't just about chores and responsibility.
Getting to go to the playground and enjoy the weather and the leaves changing and falling is also adulting in my parenting world.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And that's the news on This Day in Maine, Monday, November 14th, 2016. Our theme music was composed by Robert Holt. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall and Susan Sharon, and to Fred Bever, AJ Higgins, Mal Leary, and Patty White for their contributions. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the podcast. You can rate and comment in iTunes or email us at tdim@mainepublic.org. I'm Andrew Catalina. For all of us here at mainepublic.org, thanks for listening.